You've heard me talk about the great butcher shop, Joseph's Finest Meats, 7101 West Addison Street in Chicago, on the northwest side in Dunning neighborhood. Take it from the butcher himself, Ben Camarda.
Where I'm in the shop, I'm surrounded by some of the best food in the city. But that's coming from me, Ben. Tell us, tell us why this is the place to come if you're going to get some real good sausage.
All of our sausages are made with all natural pork. There's no fillers. There's no preservatives. There's no any type of chemicals in there. And we don't like to over season the meat, but we like to have enough spices in there just to give it the right amount of flavor, because we'd like people to actually taste the quality of the meat that we're using.
What's your favorite part about just having a family business doing this and me being in the neighborhood?
We have a family atmosphere here. Everybody that walks through our front door is treated like family, and it's very nice to be able to know people on a name-to-name basis and respect each other as family.
Remember, Joseph's Finest Meats, 7101 West Addison Street in Chicago, a family tradition since 1977. A proud sponsor of JohnCastNews.com and the Chicago Way podcast, the place where I'll drive across states to get their sausage. There's so many stories out there, and you're going to be seeing them all. There's the government shutdown and the Schumer-Trump fight, the Pritzker million-dollar getaway, where he won $1.45 million in card money. And you wonder what Paul Rico would say to that. And then what's going on in Virginia? What is with the attorney general's race? And why is it that people can be so partisan that they just ignore what's happening on the other side? For example, Virginia Democrats ignoring that their lead candidate for leading law enforcement officer, Jay Jones, talked about publicly about murdering the children of an opponent, a Republican opponent. What is that all about? I've got the perfect guest to talk about all this stuff. None other than Illinois' own Tom Bevin, co-founder and president of Real Clear Politics. There's always been one thing about Real Clear. They've always asked their readers to read not only what you agree with, but something you disagree with, because that's the point of having an open mind and discussing the news of the day so that we can be a real republic, an informed republic. And that's why Tom Bevin is here now. Jeff Carlin is here as always, executive producer, WGN Radio. And I'm here, John Cass, of JohnCastNews.com, where you always get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. And where are you as the old hippies celebrate their triumph of No King's Day, as Republicans and Democrats fight over the shutdown, as we keep getting deeper and deeper into our own silos and can't hear the other side scream for help? You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
As promised, our guest today is Tom Bevin of Real Clear Politics, co-founder and president of the organization that is nonpartisan and asks you to go to the site and read an article by someone with whom you disagree, because that's the point of this. It's not the point of tribalism and screaming around in circles and pointing at tigers in the darkness. It is about listening to other points of view. So with that in mind, welcome, Tom.
Great to be back with you guys.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, always good to have you. It's no time like the present where every day there's something else or five things or 20 things.
John, were you at the No Kings protest in Chicago yesterday?
You know, I'm in the demographic because I'm pushing 70, but I don't like the Pete Seeger thing. I mean, I when I was a kid, you know, youngster, I hit on girls at University of Wisconsin at Madison by pretending I was a communist. But that was only then. Now I'm happily married and a responsible person, and I don't have tie-dyed shirts or whatever. They look like, I don't know, what did you guys think they look like?
Jeff?
Well, I drove through Grant Park yesterday as we taped this. I do some delivering for a friend of mine who has a little niche bakery on the north side. And it was a big, big crowd. It looked organized. It didn't look chaotic. I mean, it definitely wasn't the Summer of Love type reactionary thing. But yeah, it was I knew lots of people who were going. You saw lots of people throughout the city at different spots. There was definitely a Democratic, you know, voice being pushed out there. But what their message was, I don't think they all knew. You know, they weren't all on the same page. They just knew they were upset about something. You know, a lot of different signs.
Well, who's organizing them? I see conflicting reports, and I'm not going to trust the Chicago Tribune to get to the bottom of it. But I've heard that it's the Communist Party of America sponsors this, and George Soros and those folks. Am I wrong?
I think there was an aspect to this that was organized, and you know, with millions of dollars spent on ads and coordination, and you saw some of these pictures of like they just, you know, the cameras just happened to be ready to capture them, you know, making these giant flags on the beach in California, or these giant, you know, formations that said No Kings and support Prop 50. Like, that is not a spontaneous you know, gathering of people. But at the same time, I do think there were a lot of people who you know, of their own accord, because they don't like the president, came out in, you know, and marched in their local community. So I think it was a combination of the two. I think there was definitely some organization, sure, coordination there. But there was also, I mean, look, there were a lot of people that turned out in Chicago and New York and some other places in the bluest cities in this country. And the question is, you know, what significance does it have, if any? What is it telling us, other than these people really, really, really don't like Donald Trump?
With over three decades of serving up streetwise insight and local perspective on Page Two, the voice of John Cass has a home at johncassnews.com.
There's a new sheriff in town.
This will truly be the golden age of America. That's what we have to have.
But as he settles in, can you deal with the hysteria, the meltdowns, the constant whining?
I don't know what to do.
You know what you need? You need a good cup of common sense.
It's just common sense.
Like the kind of common sense you get when you subscribe to JohnCassNews.com. I'm John Cass, 40 years a journalist in Chicago.
The Chicago way.
I opened this website, John Cass News, so that you could have a decent cup of common sense.
This great country of ours was built on its entrepreneurial spirit.
It's time that you join the frontier of independent journalism at JohnCassNews.com.
Subscribe today to get access to great columns from John Cass, Dan Proft, and others. Don't be a chum alone and subscribe at JohnCassNews.com.
In a commentary today about Pritzker's gambling winnings, I referred to it as the Democrats Hate America Day, but I don't, now that I hear you guys, I'm wondering if I should go back and change that, because wow. I'm starting to become wishy-washy, but really I can't change. They do hate America, and they're never going to change.
Some do, John, some do, not all.
I mean, I knew a lot of people who went. I've got family who went in various places around the country. But they weren't there other than just to say that they didn't like what they were seeing on going on in the communities around them or on TV or on social media. But you're right. I mean, there certainly had to have been organizing. I'd be disappointed if there wasn't some sort of organizing. You know, it'd be a lost opportunity.
Well, here's a crisis that's going on right now. And it's not on that subject, but a related. The center of American capitalism is New York City. And it's going to be controlled or dominated by a fellow who is being identified as a socialist, and many call him a communist. What are we to make of this, gentlemen?
Well, he calls himself a socialist. Yeah. And others call him a communist because
Right. Yes.
He has been on record saying things like he wants to seize the means of production, which is pretty much right out of the Communist Manifesto. Look, when I tell people I live in Chicago and I say, you know, if you'd told us 3 years ago or 2 years ago that we would be pining for the days of Lori Lightfoot, we would have just, you know, because we have Brandon Johnson now, people always laugh at that. And people who don't live in Chicago, they always say online, like, you get what you deserve. You get who you vote for. Yeah. And you guys are idiots because, you know, and there's no sympathy there for us in Chicago because we do it to ourselves. And New York is going to get the same thing. If they vote for this guy, and it looks like they're going to, they're going to get the mayor they deserve. And he is telling them what he's going to do. He's going to, you know, he's going to tax the rich and he's going to give free stuff to people. And, you know, his rubric, which look, we talked about this on our podcast the other day. I think one of the reasons he's effective is because he has come up with this word, this phrase, affordability, which is a very powerful phrase that everybody understands. And, you know, it's almost apolitical when you talk about, are things affordable or not affordable? Doesn't, you know, whether you're Republican, Democrat, like, you instantly get that. Can I afford my gas, my groceries, my this, my that? And he's saying he's going to do that by, you know, taxing the rich and giving all these freebies to people and freezing rent and opening city grocery stores and all sorts of crazy shit. It's never going to work because we know from history that it doesn't. But as in terms of getting himself winning the election and getting himself elected, I think he's hit on something that Democrats are going to use in the midterms. Republicans are probably going to copy and use to a certain degree and say, look, you know, this is how we're going to make your life more affordable.
By giving you stuff.
Well, look, I mean, that's the socialist way. And, you know, I think we all know people who have had the veil lifted from their eyes, John, can recognize that you know, there is no free lunch. Right. Somebody's paying for it somehow. And so he's going to win election. And then the question is, what happens after that? Will he actually be able to make things more affordable? Or is he going to turn New York, as you mentioned, John, one of the greatest capitalist cities in history, into just a sort of nightmare basket case with all of his plans and ideas? And I'm hoping that he governs more as a centrist, moderate Democrat and not a crazy lefty, socialist. But it doesn't look that way. But we'll see.
Well, I guess we could ask Brandon Johnson about that, eh?
I mean, this is the thing, too, about, like, the thing that Mamdani, what worries me most about him, and this is what worries, you know, I was going to say what worries me about Brandon Johnson, but one of the problems with Brandon Johnson is he is clearly, clearly so far in over his head.
Yeah.
Like, he has no clue. The guy has never run a popsicle stand, and he clearly doesn't know what the hell he's doing, and he is, you know. On top of that, there's the racial element, right? Every time anybody tries to criticize him, he always says, well, it's, you know, you don't like the black man running Chicago or
that
something.
That's something that is irritating, but I guess we should expect it, right? I don't want to expect it. I don't think it's right of me to expect people to think that way. I guess that because in a way that's almost racism. But I wish he wouldn't.
Yeah, but the thing that the two of them have in common is that Mamdani has no experience. Yeah. I mean, this is a young guy who really hasn't done anything. And he thinks he knows stuff, but he really hasn't run anything. And we're going to put this, you know, this massive, I mean, it's the largest city in America under this guy's, you know, rule. Mm-hmm. So that That is worrisome.
Tom, you and your Zoran Mandami is who we're talking about. I don't think we actually said his full name yet here, but that's everybody knows who this guy is, I hope, by now. If you're not, you should get out more. You alluded to it earlier, one of you did, Pritzker and his gambling. And I think, Tom, you tweeted something about this. Was it a blackjack? Is that his game?
Yeah, he posted yesterday, he was posting all these things. He posted this: no kings, not today, not ever. And I said, except for blackjack, of course. That's when JV loves kings. Preferably two of them so he can split and double down.
So he can split, exactly. That story came out, for those who didn't see, I mean, and the IRS forms filed, it comes out to light that J.D. Pritzker somehow won over $1 million in gambling over the last year or whatever. And everyone's like, well, wait a minute, what does that mean? You know, what was he saying about that? And coming from a state where gambling and historically governors and money, and it's never a good look. But what was your response to that when you saw people freaking out over it?
A couple of things about this story that and again, the Chicago Tribune reported it, John. You got to give them their props there.
I do. I do give them that, because Jeremy Gorner is a decent reporter and he broke it.
Yeah, very good, man.
So a couple things about this. I mean, one, you know, he hadn't listed any winnings on any previous tax returns. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly he's got $1.4 million, which is like 10% of his income. And you know, everyone's like, well, how did that happen? And then he says, well, he went on vacation, because people were thinking, okay, well, listen, if you're going to end up winning that much, you probably gamble pretty often, right? Unless he is a billionaire. So of course he could be laying down, you know, $100,000 a hand or something. And then he says, well, I just went to Vegas and got lucky. You know, I was on a trip. So he's saying it's basically just a one-time thing. But then he did say, well, I like to play cards. And, you know, as a result, I, you know, established this charity card tournament for my, you know, folks in Illinois or whatever. Mm. And then he says, well, I'm going to donate the winnings now, after he was, after he was caught, you know, basically having this. So there's a lot of questions. I mean, we still don't know where this happened.
Right.
And his company, the Hyatt Hotel chain, does operate two very large casinos in Las Vegas. And if this occurred at one of his properties, that would seem to be a real conflict that probably deserves some more investigation.
Right.
So
I don't like the IRS investigating people that with whom I politically disagree, because I've seen Obama do it. But at the same time, I don't know. Do you think it's worth an IRS look here?
Yes. Well, I think it's worth a media look.
Sunshine.
I think. Yeah. I mean, I jokingly told Carl Cannon that he would have to go out to Vegas for a week and do a deep investigation of this. But that'd be great. But I do think, listen, if I owned a hotel chain or my family owned a hotel chain and I went to Vegas, I would think that I would probably stay there and pay for, you know, and basically stay at my property or my family's property, right? I wouldn't stay at one of my competitors. So it would make sense that he was maybe at one of the Hyatt hotels and then he wins this. I don't know. I just think it raised a lot of questions, and his explanations seemed to invite more questions. And so I think this story isn't going away. I hope it isn't going away, because, you know, the media just decides it, as they have in past instances, where it's just like suddenly the curiosity just goes away. Suddenly they're no longer interested and we're moving on to the next thing. I think there's more to this story that the public deserves to know. Not that it's necessarily going to end JB's political career or whatever. Right. I don't think that, but I do think it's, you know, I think he should answer some more questions on this.
Two points of order, John, real quick on this. One, this is the guy who pulled the toilets out of a house next door to him, so he didn't have to pay his high taxes on it. Just saying. And then when that happened, his wife caught the blame for it, and she paid it back.
They tried to blame. They've tried to blame the housekeeper, but
exactly. So that, let's look at that on the table. And two, this sounds awfully a lot like any of the old schemes about, oh, we'll get a casino built over here, and all of a sudden you're getting winnings, you know, untraceable, unwashable winnings. It's just, the whole thing stinks. And on top of it, the guy's a billionaire, so he's not making any friends with this story, and it needs more.
No, that's the other aspect of this is you know, JB's always running around like, you know, I mean, his entire party is like billionaires. I mean, Mom Donnie says billionaires shouldn't exist. Bernie Sanders, you know, the DNC in Chicago is like railing on billionaires. Meanwhile, he's running to be basically governor and then president. You know, he's marching through Chicago like he's a man of the people. Right. This just obviously points out the fact that JB is, A, he's not a man of the people, and B, he does whatever suits him. I mean, the story that galls me the most about this guy is how he sent his wife and daughter down to, in the middle of COVID, while he had the entire state shut down.
He shut it down.
Right, he shut down.
Yes, he shut it down. And by the way, he continued to exert emergency powers. What? How many times, John? 30 times. He basically signed, an executive order extending his emergency powers. You want to talk about kings? That's what kings do when they don't even send it back to the legislature for a vote. They just declare unilaterally that they have, you know, all of this, you know, arrogate all this power toward themselves. That's exactly what he did for 2 years. And while he was doing that, he sent his wife and daughter down to Florida to their equestrian compound so she could ride her horses outside and not be, you know, I mean, it was just, that's the kind of shit that drives me nuts.
A king prohibits you from going to church or from going to a tavern, but allows you to go to a strip club or a casino. That's a king.
And tells you not to get your haircut, but then goes and gets their haircut. Yeah, it's not.
It's kind of humorous.
Maybe he could have governor of California be his running mate.
Yeah.
And they could run on that platform. Rules for thee.
I mean, we joke about this stuff, but I'm still fairly bitter about, you know, he ruined people's lives. Businesses had to close. I know a family that was close to ours. Their son was on a swimming scholarship to an out-of-state university, had to come home and couldn't train, couldn't go to a YMCA or a gym.
Oh boy!
To practice and basically like got his scholarship, had to quit swimming. I mean, this kind of stuff, you know, it hurt a lot of people, not the least of which, and Brandon Johnson owned some of this as well. What it did to kids and students when they got stuck at home, and if you guys have paid attention to our little neck of the woods up in Evanston, you will know that our superintendent Devin Horton has been indicted. That's just an amazing story in and of itself. This guy was an unbelievable sort of race hustling grifter who kept failing upward. I mean, he shut down our district for 2 years. And when parents started to complain about it, and I live in Evanston. It's one of the most liberal areas in the country, voted like 96% for Clinton and Biden.
Yeah.
And when parents started to get angry about it and ask what was going on, he basically said, check your white privilege. This is white supremacy talking. I mean, he just literally, it was insane. Ugh. And he got promoted. And now he's running DeKalb County schools in Georgia. Well, he was until he got indicted. Now he's been put on leave. So, yeah, I'm still pretty bitter about the whole COVID thing, as you can tell. And JB was a big part of that.
Yeah.
And nobody ever asks him about it. He never has to answer for any of that stuff.
What it's happened just like to gone. The, oh, okay, you're a leader in journalism now. You run this website, Real Clear Politics. There are many aspects to it. You're involved with journalism all the time. What happened to the follow-up question for Pritzker?
I don't know. I wish I had a better answer. I mean, I don't think that, there continues to be there still hasn't been any sort of reckoning on COVID, you know,
right.
In particular. I mean, all the blue state folks think that they, you know, Gretchen Whitmer touts her leadership during that time. I bet you if J.B. Pritzker was asked about this, he would say, you know, we did great for the state of Illinois. We saved lives and we did all this stuff. You know, Gavin Newsom. I mean, these are people that are going to be running for president. So hopefully they will have to answer when the time comes, because I think the further we get in the rearview mirror, the more we learn just how detrimental some of these lockdown policies were. But I don't know, John. I mean, the media seems uninterested in asking those kinds of questions at the moment.
I hope it's not partisanship. I hope it's not that. Like, I'm not going to ask the question that will upset the Democratic king because I'm a Democrat. I hope that's not it. I hope it's only just laziness or fear. But
as if that wouldn't be bad enough.
Right.
Yeah, because I can't just write that off, because that is the training everyone does in terms of their job. Over and over and over again, it's ask the follow-up question, ask it until you get to the nut of things. And we don't do that now.
No, we don't.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to another greener pasture, if we may, because we mentioned Mondani, Zoran Mondani, but there is always a counteraction when in politics. And what about the New York governor's race? Will the governor's race involve that counteraction that we're thinking of?
It might. I mean, if he wins, you know, and people start seeing what's going on, because obviously, you know, Kathy Hochul endorsed him, and yep. So she owns him and owns what happens in New York City, and that could turn out to be a very powerful, you know, political issue in that race for Lee Stefanik. Again, I mean, you know, Democrats in New York City are going to vote for Kathy Hochul. I don't think, regardless of what happens, probably. But it's in the suburbs. People who are watching what's going on in the city, and certainly, you know, New York State in the rural areas. That's where, you know, Republicans have made some real gains there over the last few cycles. So. It could be a real, I mean, we'll see, that has to play out, but Lee Stefanik is, you know, she's a legitimate candidate and she's pretty good. And so she's going to probably make hay of that issue, as much as she can, whether that's enough to score an upset there, you know, remains to be seen, but it's certainly not out of the question, in my opinion.
There are a lot of votes in New York City, most of them Democrat. Yep.
Tom, big story, obviously, government. Day 18, 19, whatever day you're listening to this, shut down, the government shut down. Everyone talks about it ad nauseum. What do you think? Does this go until someone, I mean, it's got to go until someone says uncle, but do you think there is any chance this ends before the 30 day, whatever record we're looking at?
I think we're going to set a new record. I do.
Yeah.
And, you know, because you just look at these, the two sides, and you know, both sides think they're winning. I mean, Democrats really do think they're winning. And they think the polling data supports that. Republicans think they're winning. And I think what's kind of interesting about this is that when was the last shutdown we had? The one that went 35 days or whatever. It was like 13?
17?
I can't even keep track.
When Obama was president?
No,
or after.
I think Trump, it was during Trump, but.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What's interesting about this one is, you know, in the past ones, you'd seen sort of the, it seemed like the side that has shut down the government, you know, came under increasing pressure. And Democrats aren't feeling that pressure, in part because I think they're reading the New York Times and the Washington Post. Yeah. And, but both sides have their sort of information bubbles now that have grown even sort of more insulated. And so when Democrats are like, you know, when they fight for the government shutdown and they're saying, well, Republicans, even though they're clearly the ones that are keeping the government shut down. They're getting good feedback from their, you know, their rank and file folks that really want them to stand up and fight. And Republicans, you know, they're getting good feedback from their rank and file who are saying, yes, you know, you have to, don't give in to the Democratic demands here to spend all this extra money. And their argument is they're spending it for people who are here illegally. And so both sides are getting positive feedback in their little information loops. And so consequently, there doesn't seem to be any desire or pressure that is pushing these two sides toward compromise. I mean, they haven't even really been talking to each other, and nobody seems to think that's a problem. So I don't. And the other thing is, you know, people thought, well, wait till October 15th, because that's when the troops stop getting paid and some of these other folks are really going to start missing their paychecks. And, you know, the 15th kind of came and went, and it wasn't that big of a deal. And so, you know, maybe that pressure will build rapidly in the next, you know, 5, 7, 10 days, but maybe it won't. And maybe we'll be sitting here, you know, on Halloween and the government's still going to be shut down. And the other thing is that, you know, Trump has threatened the Democrats by saying, look, you keep the government shut down and I'm just going to start slashing jobs and you're not getting those back. And he's trying to pull all this money from blue states, from blue state projects. Yeah. Now, a judge has temporarily halted that, but we'll see. I mean, you know, if Trump is able and he's certainly willing to start slashing federal jobs and shutting some of these agencies, like basically, you know, trimming them all down, that might get the Democrats' attention, but it might not. I mean, I honestly feel like the Democrats think that they're winning, and so they're not going to want to compromise until they feel like they're not winning anymore. And, you know, again, maybe that happens quickly, maybe it doesn't. I think we're going to set a record, though. I don't see this happening anytime soon.
35 days.
Yeah, 35 days is a record. Yeah.
28, 18, 19.
You're making the argument that each information loop, Democrat and Republican, reinforces their positions.
Correct.
So what does that tell us about media in general in this country?
One lesson from that is that Republicans don't give a shit about mainstream media anymore. Like it used to be that the New York Times and the Washington Post would editorialize, oh, Republicans are holding the government hostage, you know, and Republicans nowadays are just like, you know, go pound sand. Like, we don't even care anymore. It doesn't matter to us. And the administration thinks that too. It used to be, you know, the Bush administration and Republican administration before that. Boy, if the New York Times wrote a critical story of you, that was really, that really stung. Yeah.
Oh,
and now the administration, like, will post that story and mock it and make fun of it.
Right.
Right. So it's a completely different media environment. And with this administration and the way that they are, you know, the way that they are in sort of opposition to mainstream media and use it to their political advantage as a sort of badge of honor if they get dinged by the Washington Post or something, it's just different. So that's why I don't think the Republicans are feeling any pressure to, no matter how many stories the Washington Post, the New York Times write, it's not having the same effect that it used to have 5, 10, 15 years
ago. Exactly. If I'm a leftist editor, I just ignore all the news that bothers me.
Yeah.
I just ignore everything. It doesn't happen. Not in our world.
Right.
But one thing in their world, when it crosses over, like the attorney general's race in Virginia, and it crosses over to such an extent that even those Virginia socialist Democrats are having difficulty denying what they read about in terms of the text that the
I did this and I'll go back and look, but this is like 7 days or 9 days after there were like some of the, you know, again, the Washington Post and the New York Times were sort of forced to write about it. And the New York Times or the Washington Post wrote about it. And it's, I think it was in their like Maryland and Virginia section. It wasn't on the front page. It wasn't, but there were left-leaning quote unquote news organizations like Talking Points Memo run by Josh Marshall and the Huffington Post or Huff Post now that literally did not mention. If you go to their websites and do a search, they ignored it completely. The Nation, the New Republic. I mean, some of these folks, like, they just flat out ignored that. And so, you know, if that's where you're getting your news, you're obviously, you know, you're missing a pretty big story. But to your point, John, I think even, you know, it got local coverage. It got coverage in the Washington Post, the New York Times, some of these other places, to the point where, you know, Democrats couldn't just deny it. I mean, only if you were the most radical left could you just pretend it didn't exist. But, you know, that didn't seem to stop them from saying that this guy should get out of the race, because clearly he's still in the race and he might very well win. I mean, I think he's behind in the polls now by a little bit, but yeah, it didn't pressure them enough to force this guy out of the race.
What does that tell us?
It tells us that that the pursuit of power is more important than principle and doing the right thing, unfortunately. And, you know, I said this on our podcast the other day. I mean, I honestly, it's disturbing to me. Like, there's almost nothing you can do now. There's no sense of shame or remorse. Like, you know, and this is another case in Virginia a couple of years ago where this woman, you know, she got busted. She was doing this like OnlyFans thing or something. And when that became, you know, she had put this out there, and when the Republicans, I'm using air quotes now, pounced on it, which is always how it's right. portrayed in the media. She blamed them for, like, you know, doxing her and outing her. But she stayed in the race. I mean, people don't get out of the race for anything these days. And one of the reasons is, and we're seeing this in the Jay Jones case, because they don't get the kind of pressure to get out. I mean, Abigail Spanberger, she's gonna probably win that race. And she's going to do it by basically not doing the right thing, and because she's so much more interested in power. I mean, she would still win. She would just have a Republican attorney general, which apparently is, for her, that's unconscionable. Therefore, she can, you know, she sends a, you know, sternly worded letter to Jay Jones, as opposed to telling him, look, dude, you have to get out. We can't have you in this race if you said stuff like that. And not enough Democrats have done that. That's why he's still in this race.
That's not the Virginia I know or I knew once. The fact is, the people, they're glossing over it or ignoring it because early voting has already begun. So there's no early voting, which I can't stand, is another reason why we got to get rid of that, because of what we're seeing now in Virginia. It's terrible.
I mean, it certainly is. I agree with you. I think we should get rid of early voting. But at the very least, I mean, it shouldn't be 6 weeks long, which is what it was in Virginia. I mean, honestly, maybe you get a week of early voting at max, but, like, we don't need, you know, voting month or voting season. I mean, that's kind of insane. For a number of reasons, one of which is, you know, stuff like this happens after people have already cast their vote, and it becomes more just a, like, you know, we've got 6 weeks to round up our, you know, all of our ballots. It becomes more of a ballot harvesting thing. But yeah, I mean, it's crazy.
But now you have last minute polls to do, and I can't wait to see them. What are the polls going to be telling us in the days ahead? Because all this is going on.
Well, I don't know what the polls. I mean, that's an impossible.
Exactly.
I can tell you what they.
That's why we do the polls.
I can tell you what they say now, John. I can't tell you what they're gonna say. Well, I mean, look, these races have tightened. So it's. I mean, I'm just pulling up our. Mikey Sherrill has a 4-point lead, and there are polls that have that. There's a Trafalgar poll that came out that had it 1 point, but, you know, Chitterelli lost that race 4 years ago by 3.5 points, and he's behind by 4 now. So, you know, unless he's able to significantly outperform the polls, he's probably going to end up on the short side there. And then, you know, the Virginia governor's race is Spanberger's ahead. But that has gotten tighter too. She was up by, you know, 5 or 6 points, and couple polls actually had her, you know, there were three polls back in late September that had her up in double digits. And now she's, the latest poll has it at 3 points, but she's up 6.5 in our average.
That's tight.
So it's tightened up a little bit, but she's still in the driver's seat there. I don't think there's now, but as I mentioned, you know, Jay Jones has fallen behind in the AG's race. So he may end up doing himself in, but not affecting, he's going to drag down the ticket a little bit, but not enough to, you know, cost them the governorship.
And of course, if we want to keep up on all the polls and of course, Tom Bevin, we can't not mention the podcast and it on Sirius, which is Sirius XM, the POTUS channel, right? 124.
That's right. That's right.
6 p.m. It's 6 Eastern, is that?
6 to 7, yep.
So when do you do it?
We usually record at like 2 in the afternoon Eastern time, so we're a couple hours ahead of the news, unfortunately. There's been a couple times where we've had to go live just because stuff is broken right before we, you know, we've recorded stuff, and then an hour later, it's like no longer operable, so we have to go back in. But for the most part, we try and, you know, record a little bit early. But we have some news that's coming about the podcast. I can't talk about it just yet, but we have some news that'll be coming in the next, I don't know, week or 2 weeks. So I'll be sure to let you guys know.
One other thing that I wanted to ask you before we close is that I opened the podcast by saying one of the things about RealClear is you should be reading not only the people with whom you agree, like John Cass, you should also be reading those with whom you disagree, because that's a point of a well-informed society. As you read writers that you disagree, you hone your own opinions. And that comes, but that also means ecumenicism is important to RealClear politics, and it used to be important to newspapers. And now I see news from RealClear that one of your a big investment, I don't want to get into the nitty gritty, but from Mark Penn. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we have been had as a partner for a number of years, a company called Crest. And before that, we had Forbes was one of our investing partners. And, you know, we had gotten to know Mark. Obviously, he's been involved in politics for a long, long time, going all the way back to he was Clinton's pollster, but has been, you know, we've had him on the podcast. He writes a lot, and is very active on X as well. And so, and you know, Mark is obviously a very smart guy and has really great sort of political sense. And so we got to know Mark a little bit, and his company Stagwell, is, right. You know, this big, big sort of conglomerate that has a bunch of different aspects to it. But we ended up doing a deal with Stagwell where they have become a partner of ours, an investment partner, which is great. It's going to be looking forward to it. Hope it's a great partnership. And there's a lot of, because Mark is also, I think, one of the, you know, he is a Democrat who is, I mean, I guess you'd say now he's very much a free thinker, and he's not a, you know, sort of ideologue. He's critical of Democrats on a number of fronts when he feels like they're going too far left or overstepping their bounds. So he's I think he finds himself, and he's on Fox a lot. He writes for Fox, and he's on, you know, Bret Baier's panel, as am I. And so there's just a lot of I think synergy there. I hate that word, but
I think reasonableness
in terms of
isn't a good example.
Reasonableness, exactly, right. And that's kind of what, you know, we will, you know, we run some stuff that's less reasonable sometimes from the left and the right, but we're, because those are obviously parts of the political discourse that we can't ignore. But I think by and large, we are trying to promote people who are thoughtful, who are smart, who have insightful, incisive, you know, things to say. And Mark certainly falls into that category. So it's looking forward to it.
as the newspapers drift farther and farther into your super right or super left and lose their credibility with their readers, Real Clear Politics continues to be now a standard that I think many of us look up to.
Well, I appreciate that, John. Thank you. Coming from you especially.
I do. I've always thought it reminded me of the best of an editorial board. When you're sitting there arguing or discussing with colleagues with whom you show respect and you do respect, and considering their ideas, and then thinking about them, cheering on them, talking about them, that to me is what Real Clear Politics is all about. So I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. Like I said, that means a lot coming from you.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for being
here. Yeah, Tom. Real Clear, always a real deal. I appreciate it.
Keep you.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks. Bye.
For Tom Bevan, co-founder and president of Real Clear Politics, our friend, he's been doing this podcast with us for many years now, and he's always been ecumenical, which I appreciate. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, future physics teacher, and for me, John Cass of johncassnews.com, where you always get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. Join us, won't you, on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.